you were the leader.
The hour 10:15, we haven't arrived. We'll call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. We have a full agenda today, members. I'm going to mix it up here just a little bit. So it'd be my intention to go with my bill first. Usually I wait till last for that, but I think we need to get some of these taken care of because the others look a bit more lengthy. Okay, so that being said, then we'll go to House File 255 and Anderson bill, and then we will go to, it's my intention to go to House File 386, the Tricia bill, and there will be some people that wish to testify with concerns on 386, the Creature bill, and 387, the Knobloch bill. So when folks testify, we're going to limit to about 2 to 3 minutes in there someplace, see how it goes. We won't get everybody on the record, but we have quite a list here. It's my intention to fully hear all four bills today, or all one, two, three, four bills today. So I will move House File 665, Teacher Expense Credit Allowed. Members, if you look at the packet there, for 655, there are no amendments. Simply what we're doing, or 665. What we're doing here is instead of having a deduction for expenses that teachers have, it would be a credit. Pretty straightforward. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns on this bill? We do have a quorum. So the House Tax Committee will come to order. I will move. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of February 15th, 2017. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion fails. Thank you, Representative Schultz. I will move House File 665. Is there anyone that I've described the bill? Is there anyone who wishes to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns on the bill? Does the department wish to testify?
Which one?
665, the Davis bill.
Oh, not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any discussion from members? Pretty clear-cut what it is. Okay, then I will move that House File 665 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, members. Item next. She's not here. Okay, we're looking for authors. I think what we'll do, if unless we get hung up on this one, I will move House File 255, K-12 Education Expense Credit. Credit amount and income phase-out increased. If staff could, if someone from House Research could tell us what we're doing, Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 255 adjusts the K-12 education credit amount and the phase-out threshold for inflation since the time the credit was enacted in 1997, first effective in tax year 1998. Under current law, the maximum credit amount is $1,000 per child, and the bill would increase it to $1,500 per child. The phase-out under current law begins when household income reaches $33,500, and the bill would change that floor on the phase-out to $50,000.
Okay.
And then it further goes on to continue to adjust the credit amount annually. No, it adjusts the income level at which the credit would begin to phase out annually for inflation in following years.
Okay. So Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson, asked moves House File 255. We've had a brief description. If you please present your bill, Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I expect Ms. Manzi was very thorough in her description, so I'll just, if you have questions, I'm here for questions.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Anyone with concerns? Department? Oh, I want another Atwater story.
Well, there just needs to be more Anderson bills.
Okay. It'll be Representative Anderson, the day at the Capitol. Okay, so with that, Representative Anderson moves at House File 255. Chair Carlson, I'm sorry.
I'm going to ask, we've at times in the legislature had pretty good discussions about automatic inflationary escalators. And I just put that out there that sometimes that generates a pretty good discussion. Now, I know that there are some areas, I think what comes to mind perhaps in healthcare, where there's some, but I'm not sure. Maybe Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi could answer that question in the area of taxes, automatic escalators, or inflationary adjustments would be my question, if that's something that's routine or not.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a sort of a mixed bag. There are a variety of things are adjusted for inflation. So, for example, the width of the tax brackets. And because we use federal taxable income, the various features of the federal tax that are embedded in taxable income, such as the dependent and personal exemption amounts, are indexed for inflation. Various features of other credits are indexed for inflation. So, for example, the working family credit income phase-out, the dependent care credit phase-out. So that but there are many other dollar amounts in the tax system that are not indexed for inflation. So,
I just raised that question, being that nobody asked about it, because I know I've been in other committee settings where that kind of an issue has surfaced, and it generally has been a pretty good discussion about the pros and cons of an automatic escalator relative to the state budget. But I'll stop there. I just wanted information, I guess, at this point.
Okay, thank you, Chair Carlson. Any other questions for the author? If not, Representative Anderson S. renews her motion that House File 255 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, it's my intention now, members. We have 386 and 387. We are going to take them actually separately, but if folks that are testifying in support of or with concerns thereof could let us know if they're talking about both bills, that would be helpful, because it's not my intention to have everyone come and testify again on 387. But, of course, giving a full and free and fair hearing, we will make sure that your points are on the record. So let's go with 386. This is Representative Crescia. Welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. Do you have any amendments?
Yes.
No amendments. Okay. So, members, you should have all the information, the nonpartisan House research summaries and Department of Revenue notes. There's a letter from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, the ACLU, and C, and Marion Christensen-Hofer. So that's what you should have in your packets, members. Okay, welcome to the committee. If you could please present your bill, I will move House File 386. Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's just a simple tax credit bill.
It looks like it.
And I know I have some testifiers, so I'll let them come up and talk about it.
Okay. So, why don't you just give a brief description of what you're doing here?
Sure. So, the impetus for this bill is something that I've been working on for a number of sessions, and what we'd like to do with this bill, what I'd like to do, is offer the incentive that if you donate to a qualified foundation, that would be a tax credit. And this would allow individuals as well as corporations. Those monies would then be used as a scholarship to go to low income to low middle class students. And what we're really just trying to do is get people involved with helping students that I think can use the most attention, and allow them to use their charitable donations to be directed for the things that they feel important about.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Crescia. I think we'll go with the proponents first, and let's try 3 minutes. I think that should work, Max. We're going to be timing up here. So
I'm sorry, did you say opponents first or supporters?
Supporters.
Proponents.
Proponents. Thank you.
Proponents, then people with concerns.
That's a very big word for me, Mr. Chair. So
three syllables.
You boil it down.
Okay. Okay, please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Reynolds Anthony Harris, and I'm the founder of the Minnesota Harvest Initiative. It's a group of African-American business owners here in the state of Minnesota, and we come in support of this piece of legislation.
Well, welcome to the Tax Committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. I'll begin by basically letting you know that we made a decision about a year ago to focus quietly on two things in our state, education and economic participation. Those two are really joined at the hip, if you really think about it. The degree to which we're able to produce young people who can go out in society, do good work, is the degree to which we attract good economic results for our state. I believe that we have a history in this state of being people of innovation. I'll go back to the late 60s when many of the companies in Minnesota made a commitment to diversity in its workforce. I am a result today of the efforts by the Controlled Data Corporation to bring in young African-American, Latino, Chinese, Russian students to work for that corporation. I later went on to work for the great company of the Pillsbury family, the Pillsbury Corporation, also committed. But one thing was important. They weren't just letting me in because I was African-American. They let me in because I had a degree, and I had done well in school, and I'd come here to go to grad school. Had I not had the opportunity to have an education that began with my parents, our parents are our first teachers. Guess where I learned the concept of counterclockwise? My dad, when I was 5 years old, we dug up and we put in an apple orchard. And he told me this great Native American story that I had to put fish heads at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. And I was a little feisty at that time, and I was doing my numbers. And he said, why don't you do it backwards? I said, why? He said, because that's a new thing called counterclockwise. I learned counterclockwise before first grade. Peanuts. How do peanuts? You people from the rural area? I come from a farming family in Sylvania, Georgia, that's owned this property since the emancipation. I believe in education. I know a lot about peanuts. When I came to Minnesota, I learned a few things about soybeans. When I worked for the great Pillsbury Company, I had a chance to work with the wonderful people at Green Giant, and I learned about peas and how important that crop is to this state. What does this have to do with choice? My parents chose to live in a certain place because he was a retired Army officer, which allowed our family to be in the school system in Toledo, Ohio, where there were very few African-American kids. I was 2 in a class of 30 in first grade.
When sir, if you could kind of wrap it up.
I'll be happy to wrap it up. The point is, this is about parent choice. And I want to let you know that when parents make choices, it has lifetime impact. And I'm asking you, as adults in this room, to consider an adult decision to let parents choose where the child may go to school. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, sir. Any questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much, sir, for your testimony. And we will, members, we're going to be, if you have questions, we're going to go after each person testifies. Brandon Porter, a teacher at Cristo Rey High School. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. And for testifiers to come up, we're looking at about 3 minutes. I want to be fair to both sides.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
My name is Brian Porter. I teach physical education at Cristo Rey Jesuit High School.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. I wrote down my testimony, if that's okay.
I'm sure.
I read it. Like I said before, my name is Brian Porter. I teach physical education. Our school, Cristo Rey, is located at 28th Street and 4th Avenue in the Phillips neighborhood in South Minneapolis. It's sort of a mixed bag of things, if you will. Small businesses next to franchises, next to nonprofits, next to abandoned houses covered in graffiti. This neighborhood is full of diversity. We have Mexican people, Somali, Ecuadorian people, African American, Djiboutian people, white people. The list really could go on. Some people are there because they want to be. And other people are there because they have to be. We have no choice. I live a couple blocks from the school, so I have a close view on what goes on in the community. And oftentimes at dusk and dawn, you can see human trafficking happening in person in your real life. Women being prostituted, walking up and down Lake Street. I'm looking for a car that will stop. During the day, drug deals, and someone asking me if you want to buy drugs is not a rare thing in that community. Vandalism and graffiti all have their place, as well as the woman and the man sitting at the side of the road saying, with a sign that says, "Homeless, please help." It's really a mess, if you will. Not as bad as it was before, but it's getting better slowly but surely, but it definitely is still a mess. And last Saturday, I was going to go play basketball. I needed to go run back to Easter Ray to go get my basketball shoes. And as I was driving, there was a man on the side of the road that flagged me down and asked for a ride. And so I got him in the car, and I said, "Hey, I need to go to my job first before I drop you off where you want to go." And so he said, "Okay." And so I pulled up and kind of thinking, like, you know, I need to hurry up and get going. He told me, yeah, for some reason he started telling me how he was struggling. He literally told me he was homeless and smokes crack. So I took him there, and I was kind of feeling kind of stupid for leaving him in my car when I went inside. But I went inside and I came back out, and he had this look of face and almost chagrin on his face where he said, "Hey, are you a teacher here?" I said, "Yeah, I am a teacher here." He said, "Oh, my little brother goes to this school." And then he started just, with all this emotion just coming out, just started telling me about how his brother would never be like he is, and his brother has the opportunity to be a lot better than what he is, and how he was just so excited and happy for his brother. And, you know, at that time, I was kind of overwhelmed with emotion, too, because I know that I'm doing something. I share this story not because, you know, I want you to think about how good of a person I am for giving this guy a ride, but to the way it shows Crystal Ray in our community. It's definitely a light in darkness when it comes to education in that place. It's a jewel, it's a gem, kind of like a diamond in the rough, if you will. And it serves its community the way it needs to be served. Students have the choice to go to a school in their own community that serves them well. And with that being said, they don't have to go off anywhere else, because the opportunity for a great education is right there in the spot where they are. And it also changes the way the students look at their community as well, because then they can see, we often have students come back to our school, seniors or ones who have graduated, and they come back and they want to serve in the community, they want to serve in the school as best that they can. And
Mr. Porter, if you could wrap it up.
Yeah,
please.
No, that's no problem. Basically what I'm saying is our community needs a school like Crystal Ray. It's important that it's there. And it's important that there's other places like Crystal Ray and other communities. And that every student and every family in the community should have access and shouldn't, as far as money, be prohibited to go to a school like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Any questions for Mr. Porter from members? Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, if you haven't had the opportunity to tour Crystal Ray, do it. It is phenomenal. And your gym rocks.
Yeah, we joke about the impoverished...
Mr. Porter. Sorry? Go ahead and respond.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we joke about the impoverished work conditions I have as a PE teacher in that huge gym. So,
Mr. Chair, they have a new gym. But the program itself is amazing. And I've sent kids, I've written recommendations for students, because I taught 8th grade and I was going to high school, to go to Crystal Ray. And they come back and tell me how wonderful it is. They come back more articulate, better able to communicate, just in general. And this is just after like a year or two. It's a phenomenal program. I urge you to go visit. They open their doors like, is it once a month they open them? And anyone can go in and visit and see what's up. And then students tour you. And it's pretty amazing. It's an amazing school.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Thomas.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Porter, or perhaps Representative Krishna, could you tell the, or share with the committee what the graduation rate is at Crystal Way, what opportunities, well, mostly the graduation rate, college placement rate is at Crystal Way, and maybe how that compares to other schools in the area?
Yeah,
Mr.
Well,
Porter?
I'll get this sooner or later. I don't know exactly what graduation rates for many other schools in the area. I do know that our graduate is somewhere in the high 90s. Now, I did do some research a couple years ago because I was I put together a wrestling program for some kids in North Minneapolis, and the basis was this: we wanted students to be tutored because we wanted kids to go from elementary school, middle school, through high school. They wanted them to graduate. And the graduation rates, at least for African Americans, which was mainly the community of people that I was working with at the time, was around the 40 to 50% of graduation rate. So between high, although the numbers aren't completely accurate, high 40s, low 50s to high 90s is a big difference.
President Cosmas.
Thank you, sir.
Other questions for members? Chair Davin.
I'm sorry, I missed your name, but in calculating Crystal Ray's graduation rate, do you use the National Governors Association's four-year cohort method?
Mr. Yes, Porter?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask you the same question I asked previous testifiers from Crystal Ray. Crystal Ray has a history of discriminating against children based on immigration status. If President Trump goes ahead and repeals DACA, as he has suggested he will Crystal Ray return to discriminating against children based on immigration status?
And one second. Mr. Chair, is that germane to the bill?
No, it's really not.
I'm just asking.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Dabney?
Mr. Chair, under a U.S. Supreme Court decision, public schools cannot discriminate against children based on immigration status. Representative Krishna and Crystal Ray and the voucher advocates here today are asking for a public subsidy for their schools. And I'm trying to understand, public dollars flow here, not allowed to discriminate. If we're going to provide a public subsidy over here, are they allowed to discriminate? And it also goes to what are the values of Crystal Ray as it relates to its student population.
And Mr. Chair, before I ask my testifiers if they want to respond, I'll leave it up to. Let's be perfectly clear about what this issue is about. Part of what Crystal Ray's curriculum is, they do internships and they hire students. And based on federal law, they cannot hire people with a non-citizen status. Just like Minneapolis Public School, Minneapolis schools, they're doing nothing more than complying with federal law, as Minneapolis Public Schools are doing, the city of Minneapolis. They're simply complying with federal law. So if we could have the question rephrased to more appropriately, is Crystal Ray violating federal law, or do they have the intent to violate federal law?
Well, Mr. Chair?
Chair Dabney?
That wasn't my question. Now, Representative Krishna, I would argue, can ask that question. I laid out very clearly the U.S. Supreme Court decision doesn't allow public schools to discriminate. Crystal Ray historically has discriminated. My understanding is that they do not currently. My question is, if federal law changes, will they return to that?
Well, it's a hypothetical. Federal law would have to change first.
But, Mr. Chair, it does go to the values of the school, particularly when they're asking for a public subsidy. And I'll stop, but I do think we're looking at providing public subsidies to schools that discriminate based on immigration status, discriminate based on sexuality, discriminate based on special education needs, and I think there is a legitimate question about whether that is an appropriate use of public funds or not.
And Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if I could, can I ask nonpartisan research, is a tax credit a direct public subsidy?
Unless you want to join the research team.
Yeah, we need to get going here. Mr. Harris, briefly, then we're going to move on.
All right, Harris.
I'm speaking as the most recent Secretary of the Board at Crystal Ray. First, I can't speculate, and I'm not going to speculate. I will tell you, in the last 3 years in our board records, we have not addressed any item that's related to discrimination beyond the laws of this state. We basically go by the laws of the state, and specifically in the case of young people who are 14 that have to work, we work with the Labor Department to get that waiver, which Crystal Ray does across the country. And that's as far as I think the matter needs to go at this point. School is open. If a kid wants to come to Crystal Ray, they go through the application process. They are welcome. We're looking forward to welcoming 500 students this next fall. And we want to thank the hundreds of companies that hire our students, because that makes a difference in their lives. So thank you for having our testimony this morning, and we'll go on to our next person. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Can I ask when you stopped with the kid and put him in the car, did you run him through a discrimination or a checkpoint list?
No, sir, I did not.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's go.
Just thank you, because the question was asked, and I just want to make sure that people understand that as a matter of fact, not as a matter of opinion, the U.S. Supreme Court has held that tax deductions and tax credits are not public dollars. Just as it's a settled law by the U.S. Supreme Court. Just like when I take a home mortgage interest deduction, that money is not somehow the state's or belong to the public. It is private funds. It is settled law. There is no dispute. Thank you.
Let's go to Mr. Is it Schuyler or Troy?
Skyler.
Excuse me?
Skyler.
Okay, thank you, sir. Skyler Troy, teacher at Crystal Ray High School. And if you would please present your testimony.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Skyler Troy. I represent Crystal Ray Jesuit High School, Twin Cities.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. It's my great pleasure to be here today with you all to advocate on behalf of such a wonderful organization that's meant so much to me personally. Prior to coming to Crystal Ray as a teacher, I worked as an IT engineer at Target Corporation for about 5.5 years. I've been affiliated with Crystal Ray for about 2.5 years, maybe 3 years now. 1 year as a volunteer with Mr. Harris. 1.5 years as a full-time employee at the school. During my first year at the school, I worked with the Corporate Work Study Program as a student development coordinator. And in that role, my primary responsibility was to coach students on how to build and maintain success in a corporate work environment or in whatever role they filled as part of their job. And then for the last year, I've worked as a full-time educator for ninth grade students for Algebra 1 and for 12th grade students with computer science. I also, for extracurriculars, I coach our school's first robotics team. I don't know if you're familiar with that. For the last 2 years, I've done that. That's been a really great experience for me as well. In my time at Crystal Ray, I personally have experienced some tremendous growth in our students as well as myself, professionally, academically, emotionally. And I cannot say emphatically enough just how much this organization means to me and to many of the students that I serve as a teacher, as a coach, or a student development coordinator before. I want to take a moment just to share one anecdote I had with a student in my time working with Corporate Work Study. I had a freshman student. I accompanied him on his trip to his job site for his orientation. That was when they bring them in and telling them all the rules of the place and where the bathrooms are, things like that. This particular student had crippling anxiety. He just couldn't form words to speak to most people, even me. And I had him in class by that point for about 2.5 weeks. He's one of those type of students that you can see the wheels turning in his head as he tries to speak, but he just can't get the words out. It was a really tough thing for him to deal with. It was difficult for me to even see. We go through the entire orientation process that probably took about 3.5, maybe 4 hours. He had not said a single word the entire time. In fact, I waited with him at a bus stop to make sure that he could get home safely. And in that time, even though we were the only two at the bus stop, he would not speak to me. He did speak briefly about how he wanted to play baseball, but that was as far as he could go. About 4 months later, his mother called the school and needed to relay a message to him while he was at work, but she didn't know how to get in touch with him. So I took her message, wrote it down, and I called his job site. I did not know that he actually had been trained to work as a receptionist at this place, and I thought to myself, oh goodness, this is going to be horrible for him. So I call. Someone answers the phone. They say, hello, this is the company's name. I said, yes, I'm looking for, and that's the student's name. He says, oh, this is me. and I was floored, nearly fell out of my chair. Just in that short amount of time, this student that wouldn't say anything to me at all, even though he knew who I was able to pick up a phone and answer it professionally, and handle that kind of responsibility on a daily basis whenever he was at work once a week.
Mr. Troy, could you please wrap it up?
Of course. Also, for computer science, I teach my computer science class. I brought this idea to the school to address what I had witnessed firsthand as a substantial diversity gap in the technology industry in general. And that has been a wonderful opportunity as well to expose my students, both through that and through FIRST Robotics, to careers that they might not otherwise have been exposed to or considered before, because there weren't a lot of people in those industries, in those careers, that looked like them, that spoke their language, that they felt comfortable talking to. All of this is to say that Cristo Rey serves a very, very important mission here in the Twin Cities and across the country as well. And I think it's critical in our community to have a place like Cristo Rey, as Mr. Porter said before me.
Thank you. Any questions for members? Chair Moon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Troy. And I think both you and Mr. Porter are wonderful examples of teachers that I wish we had many, many more of you in Minnesota. So thank you so much for what you do. Just a question about sort of the student climate and culture at the school, because I'm assuming that's part of why parents may choose this for their students. But, you know, we've had a discipline working group talking about that issue with schools in our state, and I'm just wondering if you could describe for us, I mean, do you have incidences of fistfights breaking out in the school, teachers being attacked, and if not, what are you doing differently?
Mr. Troy?
Thank you for that question. In the time that I've been affiliated with Cristo Rey, we have not ever had a fistfight in our building. For a school that serves the population that we do, and frankly the size that it is, I think that's actually quite remarkable. What we've done at our school is we implemented a system, what we call PBS, Positive Behavioral Support. We don't have, like, detentions. We don't have, like, traditional punishments that we have that you might experience in other schools. When an issue pops up with a student, maybe they walked out of class because they were frustrated or they got into an argument with another student. What they do is they sit down with our dean of discipline. They have a conversation about what happened. Typically, they have to sit in a room together and write out what happened, why they think it happened. And then they are allowed to return back to class once that issue has been resolved. I think the culture in our building is remarkably positive. Most students, if you just walk through the hallways during any of our passing time, you see students that are just laughing around, having a good time, joking. Very, very few incidences of any kind of violence or even really negativity in general, in my experience.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Thank you very much, sir. Let's go to two parents here, Elvia Agudo and we'll let the Agudos come up. I don't want to get it wrong here. Okay, please state your name and who represents the record, please.
My name is Messias Agudo.
Messias, okay. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please provide your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Messias Agudo. I am father with my daughter, Natalie Agudo. She is at the school for 2 years, but I have good testimony for last 3 years, three or 4 years. The last 4 years, I have my parents in the university around the United States. That one don't happen before, but now I am happy with my daughter at the school, Cristo Rey. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Hello.
My name is Delvia Agudo. I come in to support Cristo Rey because I have a lot of friends, family, graduation in the Cristo Rey School, and my daughter is in the 10th grade, and I have a lot of teachers in the school. There is good teacher. My daughter have a good grade now because everybody helped. My family recommended to go to school. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Yeah, hi. My name is Santo Kera Morales. And I'm coming for Cristo Rey because my daughter, she's going to be finished. This is the, when she's going to Cristo Rey, she's going to be finished, Cristo Rey, she's going to be finished, college. Right now, she's in Spain. But when she's going to maybe different place, and she know Cristo Rey, she's very good at school, she's very, they have very good teacher, and my daughter, the second daughter, she's gonna be, right now she's finished, and she's going to Mankato State, she's going to Moores, and she's talking about sometimes Cristo Rey, she's very good at school, and right now I have the other one son. Right now, he's going to be finished this year, and he's going to college. And I'm coming because he's very good at school, really. And when I talk to all the teachers, they give you some sample, or they give you very good everything. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I am Maria de la Luz. I have a son who's going at Cristo Rey School. The way to change my son's life is amazing. He loves math, and the first year at the Cristo Rey School, it was really hard for him. Because at that school, that school didn't really encourage him to follow his education. At this moment, I'm really excited and happy for him. He goes in 10th grade. And he is already taking advanced class. Now he is in senior level when my son is in 10th grade. And as a mom, as an immigrant, I'm excited for him. He is my first son. And I really expect amazing things for him happen in his life. But having Cristo Rey School in my neighborhood, I do believe it's such an amazing experience for people like me who's coming from other country. And I do expect my daughter, who's 13 years old, I expect her to apply at Cristo Rey, and I hope she goes for his 9th and 10th grade, and I hope and expect her to graduate as well at the school. And I just want everybody to know how Cristo Rey has a lot of impact in our lives, and I hope this morning it's you guys can listen to us how it's changing for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for the testifiers? For members? Okay, thank you very much. We will now go to Shanna Ford.
This board is not present.
Okay. Mr. Mike Halloran. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Mike Halloran. I'm assistant athletics. Excuse me. Thank you. My name is Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mike Halloran. I'm assistant athletics director for development at the University of Minnesota, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to share my perspective and experience this morning. I want to begin by mentioning that I'm testifying as a private citizen and not as a representative or spokesperson for the University of Minnesota. I'm here today because there have been concerns that were raised that the Opportunity Scholarship Tax Credit could hurt giving in other areas. And I'm here to state that the claim is not supported by evidence and that it runs counter to experience of giving professionals and myself in the professional field. A little bit about myself. I've been in the advancement or development field for 26 years. I've raised over $300 million for for-profit and non-profit organizations across the United States that have supported religion, education, athletics, social services, causes, and raised dollars from individuals, corporations, and foundations across the United States and Canada. And as we talk about this very briefly, I do want to state that none of this is done in a vacuum. We are in the great state of Minnesota, which has an incredible history of philanthropy and giving. From the back in the day of the 5% Club to today's Keystone Giving Program, Minnesota consistently ranks in the top 5 to 10 in all measures of giving and philanthropy, and that would include giving of dollars, time, and a number of nonprofits per 10,000 in a community or in a state. In this state, we have over 51,000 nonprofits, which is pretty amazing. In Hennepin and Ramsey County alone, there are 20,000 nonprofits, and that's a good thing. And the reason that's a good thing is it allows our citizenry an opportunity to participate in ways that are near and dear to their heart and be able to meet their philanthropic passion, and that's the word we use in the industry. So that's a good thing that we have in Minnesota and something that I think is key. I want to share a little bit on my practical experience and some industry standards as well. And the first is that giving is not a zero-sum game. I have found, and it's accepted industry-wide, that there's not a finite pie to giving. Rather, there's an infinite pie. My experience includes conducting major capital campaigns for nonprofits where the annual campaign was going on at the same time. And you need to run your annual campaign to pay the bills at the same time you do a capital campaign to do those extraordinary needs. And in each instance, when I ran those campaigns, the annual giving not only did not go down, it in most cases went up. And that's an important thing to think about. And the reason for that is another industry discussion that we talk about a lot is that giving begets giving. So people's generosity cannot be outdone. And it's when we become emotionally involved in a cause and someone personally invites us to participate in that cause that either we find money we didn't know we had, or we decide we're going to use some of the other resources we have and support that cause. And I'd ask members of the committee to think about those causes that are important to your family, your friends, your coworkers, where you were personally invited and it was important to you, you found a way to support that. Being donor-centered is important as well in the industry.
Mr. Halloran, if you're wrapping
up. Okay, you bet. And with that, I think it goes back to the piece of allowing our citizenry the opportunity to participate as they like. So in wrap-up, we take seriously our civic duty of giving in Minnesota, and we think it's important to allow donors to do that opportunity and participate. So my experience and that of the philanthropic community is that the more opportunities we provide our citizens to give of their time, talent, and treasure, the better we will be as a community and as a state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And
thank you, Mr. Halloran. Questions for Mr. Halloran? $300
million? Yes, sir.
You ever work for the People for David's Committee? Oh, I can't say that. I'm sorry.
I don't know that I can respond to that.
No, don't. I never said that. We'll talk later. Okay. Thank you very much. You. Mr. Don McNeil.
And Mr. Chair, as he's coming down, can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
Just one thing I'd like, I have great passionate supporters here, but I want to let everyone know, this is across the state. This is not just the Crystal Ray School. They've been great, and they've been advocates, but we've had many, many schools come in, so I just want to acknowledge that this is statewide.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Don McNeil, please state your name and who you represent, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Don McNeil. I'm here as a father of three children, Megan, Evan, and Ethan. Megan has Williams syndrome. Evan's
trying to get into medical school. He's at the University of Minnesota and is a graduate of Holy Angels High School here in Richfield, Minnesota. And Ethan, who has classic autism, is in a special education program in Rosemont. I'm also here on behalf of the Pacer Center, and it's a part of the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. I'm going to pick up on some of the comments. You know, Crystal Ray is an excellent school. So is Holy Angels. But so are the public schools that are providing the care for our kids with special needs and special education. We speak against this bill because you are choosing where to devote the money at the cost of those that are the least among us. Now, the children that need the resources most desperately in special education are those that will pay the price if you divert money away from the public school resources. That's why we speak against this. As you well know, if you attend a private school, you are not necessarily going to get special education services. My son Ethan would not be welcomed. He would be loved at the Holy Angels, but he would not be welcome for education. He has only one choice, and that's the public schools. I do not want to see those resources diverted, and I ask this committee to walk carefully when considering this bill. We ask that you do not pass this bill. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. McNeil? Okay, is there anyone else wishes to testify in support of House File 386? Are we through the supporters? Okay, now we'll go with those with concerns. Sarah McLaren?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am here today with some of my friends. We are not with any organization, but we are mothers of children with special needs.
Hey, ma'am, can you please state your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Sarah McLaren.
Okay, thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. As I said, we are here just as mothers with children with special needs. Some of you met my daughter by picture at last week's Education Finance Committee meeting. Eleanor, I've brought her picture again for those of you who did not get to meet her. I'm here to urge you to oppose House File 386, as are my friends here with me. My six-year-old daughter here in front of you, she has autism spectrum disorder. She was diagnosed 3 years ago and has benefited from the services provided by the public schools as well as private therapies. She, in many ways, is a typical six-year-old, but she is not a typical six-year-old in that private schools do not have to admit and they do not have to support her. She is only able to be with a mainstream classroom due to the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which private schools do not need to abide by. So her only choice is the public schools at this point. 386 will, whether or not it's considered a subsidy, it will divert tax dollars to schools that can and do choose to exclude children like my daughter. It's the school's choice, not the parents, for children with disabilities. There's a simple reason for this, in that children with special needs are more expensive to educate. However, my daughter has great potential, and I know she is going to be a very productive, accomplished Minnesotan if we continue to put the funds and the state's priorities where they should be, which are on schools that include all children. We all came up here together, so I'll just have my next person with me take the microphone unless anyone has any questions. And thank you for your time, members of the committee.
Thank you. And before we do that, we will go in whatever order you would like. But I'd like to recognize a former colleague, a former member of the Tax Committee, Commissioner Tom Rukavina. Welcome to Tax Committee. No, you stay on that side. Okay, who would like to testify next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tracy Fussy. This is my son, Griffin Fussy. He's a seven-year-old, and like many seven-year-old boys, loves Star Wars. He's very devoted to it. He is also someone that is
twice exceptional. He has both ADHD and autism and anxiety. But he is intellectually gifted, so at least he's got something. And he does have a mother who will never, 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 never stop advocating for him. He does not know the names of his neurological disorders. He just knows that his brain works differently. To get a better understanding of what it's like to educate Griffin, I will read briefly, very briefly, I promise, from a report card I received today, and it seemed fitting. Griffin is a gentle, kind boy with very big feelings. He has a strong sense of what is fair, and he can be very expressive when he feels challenged. He seems to worry when he isn't in control of a situation, and he has a difficult time resolving issues on his own. It takes time, but with the help of adults and conversation, he can calm himself down. He has taught me a lot. That's from one of his teachers. Griffin does have the kindest heart of anyone I have ever met. But through no fault of his own, he often confronts an unkind world because of his disabilities. But I know he is receiving tremendous support and love at his amazing school, his amazing public school. The staff help him deal with his big emotions and behaviors stemming solely from his disabilities. This enables him to learn and grow so that he will be a tremendous asset to this community when he grows up. HF 386 will subsidize tuition for private schools that do not have to admit my son and that will not admit my son. Anecdotally, I live across the street from Breck. I would love to send him to Breck. They will not take my son because of his disabilities, because he is more expensive to educate than my neighbor and than my five-year-old son. He is an investment, though, in a brighter future for everybody. Even schools specifically designed for children with disabilities will not take Griffin because, as I mentioned, he is twice exceptional. He has both autism and ADHD. Thank you. Running out of time here. Rather than subsidize schools that can and do discriminate against my son based on his disabilities, I urge you to direct funds to strengthen the public schools and the services that they do and must provide. This benefits not only my son, but all of us in the future. God does not support discriminating against children based on the gifts that he has given him, and I implore you to oppose this bill or call me and tell me why my child doesn't count. I will give my cell phone number to my representative, Peggy Flanagan. Please call me if you choose not to support my son. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, the person that just testified was not on the list. I want to go through the list to make sure we have people on the list here. Yeah, I should have a Maria, a Karen Eliason, Maria Lee, Kathy Nathan, Anna, Scott Kroonquist, Valerie, Greg King, Grace Kelleher, Nancy Ledesma or Ledesma. Is there anyone else which testify on behalf or with concerns on the bill that's not on the list? Department, you're always on the list. So do we have folks on the list here?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make some brief comments.
Okay, what's your name?
Steve Larson.
Who says you get to go at the end? That's better, Mr. Larson. I've known Steve for 1,000 years. I'm not being mean or anything. Okay, Steve Larson. Thanks, Steve. Okay, who's next? Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Maria Geigel, and I am here as a parent. I'm probably not going to say anything that's too much different from what you've heard. I have a 5-year-old son named Isaac. And he's goes to Minneapolis Public Schools right now. And like the women that have spoke before me, he has a lot of interests. He's very unique. And although his academic abilities are above average, he requires support in the classroom. So HS 386 is meant to give students a choice where they want to go to school, but this approach does not benefit all students and would be detrimental for students like my son. Because the private schools that would receive this tax money do not accept my son or provide the supports he needs in the classroom to develop his academic and personal potential. HS 386 would divert resources from the public schools And the public schools are foundational pillars in our society. And we don't want to put those resources toward schools that are now not accountable toward the same metrics. Students like my son would lose valuable resources, and students who attend those private schools would also lose the benefits of attending school with students of diverse abilities. I think we can all agree that educating our students is an important investment, but funding private schools is not what we should be doing with our tax money. I'd like to see us use what we have to ensure that all children in Minnesota receive a quality education, not just those that can be supported by private institutions. Thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll go with the next witness, and then we'll go to questions from members. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Good morning. My name is Karen Scheide Eliasson, and I'm a Minnesotan. I'm here on behalf of my kiddos. That's Caitlin, she's six, and that's Eric, he's almost five. Eric attends preschool in our public school systems in our local public school district. He's neurotypical. Caitlin's my kindergartner. She attends Cherryville Elementary in the Lakeville public school system, and she has autism spectrum disorder. Eleanor and Caitlin are friends. They met in therapies together, and they still remain friends even though they don't attend the same public schools together. I'm here today to ask you to oppose this bill. Well, I understand that the new tax credit proposal is not synonymous with school vouchers. I'm afraid that if passed, this legislation would lay the foundation for a future voucher system in Minnesota, as both share a common goal of moving state funds toward private education and away from public education, which has a negative, disparate, and discriminatory impact on children with disabilities like my daughter. I don't want to pile on. You've heard some of my friends and these other mothers have had to say about children with disabilities, but I just want to tell you a little bit about my daughter because it's unique and it lays the basis for why I feel so strongly and request that you oppose this bill. 3 years ago, my daughter wouldn't, at the age of three, wouldn't even trace her letters. Within 6 weeks of her diagnosis, we learned about her condition by actually taking to the early preschool screening. She seemed pretty typical to me, but she didn't pass. Within 3 weeks of indication she had autism and through evaluations at the University of Minnesota where the diagnosis was confirmed, we had her in intensive therapies, both private and through the public school system, probably 40 hours a week between the two. We've all worked incredibly hard, her teachers, her therapists, mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, but most of all, Caitlin. I couldn't be more proud of her. Now, 3 years later, she's in kindergarten in her public school. She not only can trace her letters, she can write, she can read. She's building magnificent Cinderella castles for all her princess dolls. She plays My Little Ponies with her typical classmates in the public school system, and she races remote-controlled cars with her brother. But this wouldn't have happened without all this. She absolutely needs supports. What my husband and I want for our daughter and our son, and what all parents want for their children, is that they grow to be successful, productive citizens of the state of Minnesota. And my daughter can do this. But she's going to need supports, and she's going to need the education that is afforded to her under law and in the state of Minnesota. Under this bill, this bill would discriminate against her. As these other mothers have said, private schools will not accept my daughter. And if they did accept my daughter, they're not obligated to provide her with the supports that she needs. With those supports, she will be a productive, positive member of society. Please don't divert those funds away from the great schools we have here in Minnesota, the public schools, to the private schools that can't support or won't support my daughter.
Therefore, now, if you could please wrap it up.
Absolutely. Therefore, please fund the public schools. We can continue to achieve excellence in our public schools when we fund them. And then we know without question that investing in education of all children, including children with disabilities, yields significant and measurable return to our society. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krisha, I'm a little confused, but I'm hearing that PACS dollars are going to be going to these private institutions. It's my understanding that it's private donors that will be helping fund different scholarships. Can you clarify that for me?
Representative Krishna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, those are tax credits. People with their own money, if they choose to donate it, there's a tax credit for that.
Representative Kosnick? Okay, let's go to the next witness. Maria Lee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. And
good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Yes, my name is Maria Lay, and I'm a third grade teacher in the Roseville Area School District.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I come to you here today as guardian of my younger brother with autism, as a public educator, and as a former student in both public and private education. My school serves approximately 80% students of color who predominantly come from low-income families and present various needs from academic to mental health. I continuously find my job challenging because I am serving many families in crisis with extremely limited resources, making it very difficult to provide my students with an equitable education that they deserve. My colleagues and I work hard each year to ensure that we are giving our students a quality education that will prepare them to be global citizens. I personally hold high expectations for all my students and therefore also pair my high expectations with high help so that all students have the tools that they need in school and in life. As a public educator, I am also held to high expectations. I have the privilege to serve my community who entrust their children to me daily. I then have the responsibility to be held accountable to both my community and to my state. This is seen through becoming a highly certified teacher, being held to high curriculum standards, and through the reported outcomes of my students' education. Minnesota needs to fund public education as our society continues to grow more and more diverse. Diversity is an asset that allows us to be global leaders. We owe our students an equitable education that allows the public schools to give children the resources they need. If Minnesota is to be a leader in education, it cannot divert state money to private schools. We need to keep money in public education because we accept all students. Private schools do not have to accept everyone. In fact, private schools can refuse or dismiss students. Yet private schools get the benefit of public dollars but are not held to the same accountability standards as public schools. If public dollars are going into private education, then they must be held to the same accountability standards. Private schools must have the responsibility to taxpayers to report how students are doing, among many other things. To give you a better picture on the importance of funding public education, I will share my story where my parents pulled me from the public school system into a private school. Like many families, my parents wanted the best education for me. They thought that putting me into a private school would allow me access to resources in my education. What they discovered later was that even in a school with access to resources and funding for its teachers, I was consistently at the bottom of my class. There was no drive for the private school system to hold me to high standards and to give me the differentiation that I needed to succeed, despite all of its resources, with no accountability. I was one of three minorities in the entire school at the time. I was extremely isolated in my school, and it was here that I first learned that I had an accent. I endured bullying for all 4 years and suffered from depression. There were even times that I contemplated suicide. My family made the decision to put me back into the public school and hope that it would receive the proper funding necessary for the system to operate.
Ms. Lay, if you could wrap it up, please.
Yes. I tell you this story because this is unfortunately the story of so many families, in particular families of color, who must make the hard decision between putting their child in a diverse neighborhood school or a private school with resources due to the funding it receives. Minnesota should not put its family in a position in which they must choose between schools, and instead Minnesota should fully fund public education and enforce private education to be held to the same accountability standards, especially if it is receiving public funding. Minnesota needs to think of all of its students and not the select few that get into private schools. Minnesota must follow its teachers' example by pairing high expectations with high help. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Lay? Thank you very much. Ms. Kathy Nathan. And welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Kathy Nathan, Advocacy Chair of the Minnesota PTA.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. On behalf of the Minnesota PTA and our 220 local units and 8,000 PTA members, and a parent of a child currently in public schools and a graduate of public schools in Rochester, we appreciate the opportunity to testify today in opposition to legislation that includes tax credits that support non-public school tuition and scholarships. The PTA is the oldest and largest volunteer child advocacy association in the United States. Our association remains steadfast in our approach of putting the needs of all children first by advocating for high-quality public education. The public education system must be strengthened with the support of adequate funding, continue to be governed by public officials, and measured by high standards of accountability for educational outcomes. There is a difference between public school choice and the use of taxpayer dollars for private and sectarian school programs. Public schools have responsibilities to meet in exchange for receiving taxpayer dollars. Private and sectarian schools do not. And there is nothing in any of these bills that raise the accountability expectations for private and sectarian schools in exchange for the public tax dollars that will, in the end, support tuition payments to these schools. For the past 6 months, I have served on the Minnesota Department of Education's Accountability Advisory Committee for the Every Student Succeeds Act. We spent a lot of time discussing how best to hold our public schools accountable for academic progress and achievement, school quality, student readiness for college and career, attendance and graduation rates, family engagement, and progress for English language learners. These accountability measures will be used to determine the effectiveness of our public schools, including the identification of schools that need improvement and schools that are models for success. As has been true in the past, these measures will also no doubt be referred to in the upcoming debate over how much money to provide to Minnesota's public schools through the state budget. This bill also has a requirement to identify a standard or goal against which the effectiveness of this tax credit will be measured. One of the two standards listed is the total number of eligible students who receive better educational opportunities. But none of these tax credit bills include a definition of better educational opportunities, provide any mechanism to collect data, or identify an evaluation methodology. These are essential components to an effective accountability system for all schools. Public schools are evaluated and held accountable for their efforts to improve educational opportunities for students. Why will private and sectarian schools not be evaluated and held accountable in the same way in this proposed legislation? How will you know whether or not this legislation is successful? The Minnesota legislature would better serve all children by using funds to make public schools stronger and safer, fuel innovations in public schools that are working, such as community schools and innovative public-private partnerships.
Ms. Nathan, please wrap it up.
I will. Thank you, sir. Or use tax credits to companies that support employee volunteering in our schools or mentoring students. Thank you for your consideration, members.
Thank you. Any questions for members from Ms. Nathan? Thank you very much. Anna Gimmerlein? I hope I said that right.
False,
okay. I got the Anna right?
No, that's the part you got wrong.
Kelly? please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chairman, members. My name is Anna Gimmerlein.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Gimmerlein.
Thank you. So I am a Lakeville custodian in the public schools there.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Today I'm here as a parent and as an employee, but more importantly, as a Latina woman, a mother and a grandmother who believes in strong public schools and how they are essential to make Minnesota a great place to live. A few years ago, I moved my family back to Minnesota because of the great schools that we have here. And I believe strongly in making sure our schools are funded in a way that support all students. I'm proud that public schools accept all students, including children of all religions, children of color,
children of special needs, and children with learning disabilities like my two daughters, who were diagnosed with ADHD very young. This is something that corporate-backed private schools can't say that they do, but our children need. At a time when we need to address racial disparities in our schools, and when children are facing more and more challenges in the ever-changing world, this tax break would starve our public schools. I want my grandchildren and all Minnesotans to receive world-class education. We have work to do to make sure that all of our students are getting the opportunities that they deserve. But if we start undermining public education, it will harm all students, but especially those that need our support. As a school employee, but even more importantly, as a person of color with grandkids in the public schools, I urge you instead to make a real effort to fund our public schools so we can finally address racial and geographical inequalities that are holding back far too many students. Thank you.
What school district are you from?
Lakeville.
North or south?
It's in the southern part of the metro.
Oh, north or south, is Lakeville one school district?
Yes, it is.
Two high schools, one district.
We have two high schools.
One district.
One school district.
It's the Panthers and the Cougars?
Correct.
Is it? Okay. I just made that up. Okay, so any questions for Anna Gimberland? Thank you so much for your testimony. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it. Scott Kroonquist, Executive Director, Association of Metro School Districts. That looked like more than Scott to me. So we're having a takeover here. Kroon, is this Valerie, and then Kroonquist, and Ms. Kelleher, right? Okay, go ahead and start, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd just like to thank Representative Preacher and Representative Knobloch for the ongoing dialogue that we have had with them. They've been very open to our concerns, and we are pleased to work with them on a variety of other issues. Unfortunately, we do disagree on this one, and so I am speaking today in opposition to House File 386 and 387. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm really focused on just two key issues. Number one is priorities and limited resources. The reality is we have a limited supply of taxpayer dollars. I know you're soon going to be setting your committee budgets. I know Chair Loon is in there fighting for a good target for K-12 education. The reality is that any money diverted through tax credits to private school or to private scholarship will not be available to Chair Loon or any of the other chairs of the fiscal committees, including your target, Mr. Chairman. My reading is right. House File 386 carries a revenue note of $80 million in the 2021 biennium. House File 387, a revenue note of $50 million. Again, those are resources that would not be available to help your public schools. And in fact, the $80 million figure, if my reading is right, I think would be about the amount needed to fund another bill coming to your committee, authored by Representative McDonald, that would address equalization and taxpayer fairness and equity issues statewide and education funding equity issues. And so we would argue that those resources would be much better spent on that bill. The other point I just want to quickly make, I'm not a tax expert, but I think one of the theories behind tax credits is that you would like to incent behavior that would bring about a public good. And I think House File 386 and 387 fail that test, Mr. Chairman and members. There is no research that shows that private school vouchers or tax subsidies lead to better achievement. In fact, there are extensive studies, and I'm now referring to nonpartisan, peer review based studies, that shows that there is a benefit. In fact, just the opposite. If you compare apples to apples, and by that I mean if you compare students from similar socioeconomic and demographic backgrounds, study after study has shown that students in the traditional public schools perform as well or better than their private school counterparts. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. I would like to be next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozlan. I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'd like to just clarify, in addition to allowing private individuals or corporations to donate to foundations for purposes of donating to private schools, this bill also extends a tax credit to extends the credit to include private school tuition, which MASA is opposed to. I would like to just remind the committee, two years ago, the target for the Education Finance Committee was $157 million. And we appreciate Representative Loon's efforts and know that she's working very hard to have a higher target this year. I'd like to just remind members that the cost of unfunded special ed in Minnesota is $617 million. The per pupil formula, which is the backbone of how all public schools are funded here in Minnesota, has not kept up with inflation. And if it would, it would be $550 million to catch up to inflation. That's a total of about $1,225 per pupil. We do have concerns about redirecting funds, which would then make it much more difficult to provide investments in public education. I'd also like to just remind you heard from a number of special ed parents today that public schools accept all students. They accept all students and cannot turn a student away. I looked up some of the application requirements for some private schools here in Minnesota, and while our private schools in Minnesota do an excellent job, they can limit who accepts which students they accept. One of the application admission requirements for one of the public private schools here in Minnesota is a student has to provide an application for admission. They have to provide copies of their 7th and 8th grade report cards. They have to provide copies of their standardized test scores. They have to complete a student essay. They have to get three different evaluations, one from their 8th grade language teacher, one from their 8th grade math teacher, and one from a community leader. And lastly, they also have to do a student interview. Well, so that says to me that that particular private school will limit attendance and admittance to a student that doesn't meet some kind of expectations that that particular private school has laid out. Our public schools, once again, accept all students regardless of their disability status, regardless of their race, regardless of whatever kind of learning challenges or learning opportunities they bring to the public school door. Thank you for the time to testify, and I'll stand for questions later.
Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent elected school board members from every school district in the state. And I want to start that to let you know that MSBA has had a long-standing position that opposes any new legislation requiring education funds for non-public schools and opposed tuition, and I'll just stop on tuition, tax credits for attendance at private elementary and secondary schools. This bill centers around the principle that tax credits are being incented, as Scott said, through tax policy. The only results that you will look at from this incenting schools is, in fact, how many kids participate in the program and if they have educational opportunities. To me, that is a really weak standard for an investment of $80 million. You also, as legislators, have sort of handicapped Minnesota public schools. Let me give you a flavor of some of the things public schools must deal with. Schools must have a licensed teacher and administrator, conduct an annual audit, have multiple public meetings to share information, must collectively bargain in good faith. We must meet layoff times. We must meet the world's best workforce requirements. We must fund elite pension funds. We must provide employee health insurance as dictated by law. We have data practices requirements and follow open meeting laws. We have state and special ed education requirements. Presently, cross-subsidy with both federal and local is about $800 million. We have facility requirements. We have limited our fees we can charge. We have school bus requirements. And we even make you have a certain number of acres set aside to build a school district. School districts are also required to have mandated policies. We have 33 mandated policies from the state, and I will do you the favor of not reading all 33, but if you'd like to have them, I can give you a copy.
No, it's quite all right.
Lastly, we offer 28 options in the public school for parents and kids. Let me just repeat that, 28. I also could read all 28 options, but I think I want to make it clear that public schools strive to meet every child's need going forward. Our concerns in this bill consider the inflationary adjustment for private and religious schools. Public schools have asked for that kind of inflationary adjustment in our general education formula for the last 15 years. For us, it would be about $500 million every 2 years just for inflation. Lastly, locally elected school board members from around the state view this bill as an attack on public school systems. Members of my organization feel strongly that expanding tax credits and deductions to cover private school tuition and including an inflation adjustment for tuition.
Ms. Kelleher, if you could wrap it up, please.
It's not a wise investment of taxpayer funds.
Questions for members? Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not necessarily a question, but perhaps one will come up as I briefly just explain my support of the bill. We just can't sit back and do nothing to close the achievement gap, and the legislature for many years has done everything they can on both sides of the aisles to do so. But I'll point out that Crystal Ray and the Ascension School in Northeast Minneapolis as an example of being able to close the achievement gap. For example, the Ascension Catholic School has been able to close the achievement gap by ways of, if you compare it to some of our public schools, such as Nellie Stone Johnson in the same neighborhood, or similar neighborhood, their test scores in their science and reading are three times that greater than Nellie Stone Johnson. Their math scores are two times greater than this school of Nellie Stone Johnson, the public school. And yet they do it for around approximately $7,000 to $8,000, $9,000 per pupil, whereas the other school, Nellie Stone Johnson is an example, not to pick on them, does it for $14,000 to $20,000 per pupil. And the demographics are the same. Similar number of students of minority and similar number of students who are on reduced or free lunch now. So what they're doing is a magical formula. Their parents are engaged. Their teachers are engaged. They have some, maybe some stricter rules. But the students, as you heard from the testimony earlier, there's no fist fights. They're well-behaved, they're disciplined, and they're successful. Why are we so why are you, why are all the testifiers that are against this so afraid of those successful endeavors? You should be embracing, in my opinion, of course my mom said we shouldn't never should on someone, but I think you should be embracing their successes and realize and recognize that Representative Creech's bill will help to do that, to close the achievement gap, that every student has an opportunity to learn, and pull them out of a school that's not doing so well. I don't understand the fear, frankly, and I think that there's some selfish folks not thinking of the children. That's what I think. It's all about the children. And those two schools that I signified, that I spelled out, are doing it successfully. Now, if we can't in the state of Minnesota do the same thing in our public schools, then we ought to be ashamed of ourselves.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Again, Valerie Dilsland, representing the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Representative McDonald, I hear you, and I want to assure every single one of you that superintendents across the state are not ignoring the achievement gap, that superintendents across the state, that teachers across the state, that other school district staff across the state are not ignoring this achievement gap, and they are making gains. I welcome you to come visit the Osseo School District Superintendent. Come to Osseo and see what Superintendent Kate McGuire is doing to close the achievement gap. And while there are continue to be challenges, I do not think it's fair to say that school districts around the state are not doing their best to try to close the achievement gap. Despite the lack of funding, despite all of the different requirements that the legislature and the Department of Education places on them. Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Let's wrap it up here.
Just for the record.
We've got a lot of witnesses.
Just for the record, I did not say... did not say that school districts around our state are not doing their best to close the achievement gap. So that should be duly noted.
It is duly noted. Okay, we'll now go to Mr. Greg King. Thank you for testifying, folks. We're going to go to Mr. King.
and then Nancy, and then we're saving for last, Mr. Steve Larson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome in. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
My name is Greg King. I'm a parent in Minneapolis, and I got three students in the Minneapolis Public Schools, and I also do education equity organizing with a group called Isaiah, which has member congregations from St. Cloud down to Mankato, but mostly centered in the metro area.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. And thanks to the members of the committee for the time. The education equity leaders that I work with and who are in the public schools all the time asking them to do better by our students of color are very concerned about this opportunity scholarship tax credit. As a matter of policy, we understand that it's not a voucher, but the effect is the same, and we've heard that already of the diversion of funds, general funds, that the public has put into a pool that are being taken out and used to be directed to institutions that are not accountable to the public and not whose doors aren't open to every child. We, in my free time, I do education equity organizing. I'm in communities. I know better than anyone, or as good as anyone, I shouldn't say better, that our public schools are imperfect. And yet, the congregations that I work with still feel they represent our best hope for closing opportunity gaps between races and economic status and even geographies. They struggle with the same gaps that we have in society. And I would rebut the notion that we can't get better results. We have many examples of programs that do work and investments that are great. Student support services, which have been held up many times as a need across our state, especially when combined with wraparound full-service community schools. Recruitment and retention of teachers from the communities they're in and training on great philosophies such as restorative practice and PBS, which you heard about today, works very well to help and suspensions and help kids stay on the graduation track. And, of course, universal pre-K, I don't think anybody disputes what a great investment that would be for our kids and for closing those gaps. School choice, we find to be a false choice. And then when implemented broadly and without significant strings attached, which we have seen in places like the Detroit Public Schools and states in the South such as Alabama, actually increase segregation and racial inequality because the accountability lever isn't there. One of the things I can say in Minneapolis public schools is that when they aren't meeting the standards of our communities and members, they still have to listen to us and answer to us as citizens and concerned parents and people. And that's very important when you're thinking about where to divert public funds. So again, I would encourage the committee to think very hard about whether this is a good investment of public funds. We do not see it that way. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for Mr. King? Okay, thank you very much. We'll now go to Nancy Ledesma.
Almost.
How'd I do? Nancy. Please state your name if you represent for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Nancy Ledesma.
Ledesma. Thank you.
The Nancy part was good. I represent myself, and I also am a member of Isaiah. Good morning to all of you. I'm just going to ask for your eye contact. This is kind of what I do in my classroom as well. I teach to the eyes, and that's what I tell my mentees that I work with. So if you could put down your cell phones and give me your attention, I appreciate that. Good morning to all of you, and thank you all for your public service to the citizens of Minnesota. My name is Nancy Olson Ledesma. I am a product and graduate of South St. Paul Public Schools, go Packers, a graduate of the Public University of Minnesota, a mother of two public school graduates from South High School, a public school in the Minneapolis Public Schools District, and a retired public school educator in Minneapolis Public Schools. I taught French to middle and high school students from 1980 until 2013 when I retired from the classroom. I now mentor, coach, and train world language teachers in Minneapolis Public Schools
and other districts that hire me for my expertise. You see, we have something in common. We're all public servants. Right? I'm also a member of ISEA, and I am really appreciative of all of the stories that people have testified when it comes to their students. You can imagine that I also have many individual stories about students because, after all, I have taught thousands of public school students. I'm here today to urge you to vote against these scholarship tax credits or vouchers for private or religious schools. What I bring to you today is a historical perspective from a professional public career that has spanned more than 36 years. I have witnessed the damaging effects of systemic inadequate funding of public schools. Over the years, decades really, I have witnessed fewer supports for our public schools. Our public school students that previously had enabled them to be more successful in the classroom. Most of these supports come in the form of people. People like academic counselors. Minnesota has the lowest number per pupil in the country. Chemical dependency counselors, extracurricular activities, education assistants, special education teachers, lunchroom staff, custodial staff, deans, and parent liaison positions. These are all people that support the classroom teachers and our students and our families, especially of the neediest children. Of course, yearly, a cumulative inadequate funding has led to overcrowded classes and fewer electives, something I'm sure you've heard over and over again. I'm not the first one to say this.
If you could please wrap it up.
Sure. Then I have some questions. Do these conditions help our public education students? Does redirecting money from our already underfunded public schools to discriminatory private and religious schools help close the achievement gap and to alleviate the cycle of generational poverty some of our neediest students experience?
Please wrap it up.
Sure. Can I decide to spend my tax dollars that go to libraries at Amazon instead? Can I decide to have my tax dollars refunded to me because I don't visit the state parks?
Okay, ma'am, we're going to go to Mr. Larson.
Thank you.
Now. Thank you. Mr. Larson, then the department. We're going to be done at noon. I'm going to postpone the 387 to a future meeting. Please look at your agendas, and then we will wrap up by noon, as I said. How's everything in the southeast, Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chair, I live in Shoreview now, so the southeast part of Shoreview is great.
Oh, so I don't have to be so nice to you
now.
I
used to be in the southeast part of Rochester.
Yes, well, good to see you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
I'm Steve Larson with the ARC Minnesota. I'm the Public Policy Director, and I'm here speaking both on the ARC, ARC Minnesota's behalf, which advocates for individuals with developmental and intellectual disabilities, and also the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, which includes PACER, the Autism Society of Minnesota, the Brain Injury Alliance. And, Mr. Chair, I graduated from Moundsview High School, Moundsview Mustangs, in 1969. And if I was a student with disabilities back then, I probably wouldn't have graduated from Moundsview High School. I can remember very, very few students with disabilities either in my grade school or high school. In 1976, the first federal law passed that mandated that students with disabilities have a right to a free and public education, an appropriate public education. Students with disabilities attending private schools through parental choice do not have the protections under IDIA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, including a free, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. Due process rights are eliminated. If a family is not satisfied with the educational outcomes in a private school, they have no recourse or protections. If a student is discriminated against by the educational setting, the parents and student have no recourse or protections. They have no access to a full range of special education services and educational settings, including access to teachers with appropriate licenses to support the student in making educational progress. Guarantees of service through IDEA include accessible education materials, including Braille, related services such as OT, PT, sign language interpreters, audiologists, speech and language services, support from paraprofessionals, etc. Mr. Chair, testimony by many of the families that were here present described their struggles in education with their students with disabilities, and those struggles continue. But one of the good things that we have is that we have a strong set of rights for students with disabilities. The best way to ensure that every child, including those most vulnerable, has access to a free, quality education is to invest in our public school system and in strategies that have been proven effective for students with disabilities. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. We'll now go to the department. Members, if you have questions for any of the testifiers, please contact them offline. I generally don't like to do that, but we will get this done. Is there anyone on House File 387, the Knobloch bill, that traveled more than 50 miles to get here? I just have Mr. Bartholomew, who's in the Rhodian junkie category. Rhodian groupie. Not junkie, groupie. And there's a lot of people in that category here. Not junkie, Rhodian groupie. I'm sorry. That's an old Wayne Seminole line. I should get it down. There he is. Okay. Okay. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I was able to reach out to Representative Preach's office yesterday, and I briefly spoke to Representative Knobloch before the hearing. I do have some prepared remarks, Representative Davis, that I will try to get through as quickly as possible. This bill makes several changes to the existing K-12 credit in addition to proposing a new income tax credit as well.
Mr. Cummings, you are not limited to 3 minutes.
I'll first go over the changes.
And Mr. Bartholomew is not a junkie.
Okay. I'll go over the changes.
Mr. Cummings.
I'll first go over the changes to the K-12 credit and the newly proposed credit. The proposal would modify the K-12 credit, allowing non-public schools tuition as an allowable expense. Under the proposal, the K-12 credit would increase the funding of private schools through reimbursement of public dollars at a time when there are significant needs for our public schools. The maximum credit is $1,000, which is less than 25% of the average private elementary school tuition in Minnesota. For most tax preferences, we have found that most of the state funding would go to those already engaged in the activity, not new participants in various tax initiatives. Therefore, it will most likely primarily benefit those who have already enrolled their children in private schools. If the concern that the committee is trying to address is a lack of options for young children, funding Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith's voluntary pre-kindergarten proposal would more than double the number of children in pre-kindergarten programs. The new income tax credit established by this bill would allow a credit of 70% of contributions made to a 501c3 organization that awards scholarships to qualifying students to attend a non-public elementary or secondary school. The credit is not refundable, but any credit amount not used may be carried forward for up to 5 tax years. Having a carry forward makes this tax credit unlike any other state tax credit for individuals in Minnesota. This credit proposes significant burdens and hurdles for the state, and it's unclear if it would improve educational outcomes. The idea behind the credit is to reimburse a taxpayer who made a contribution to a foundation that awards scholarships. A more direct method of providing enhanced educational options for Minnesota's children would be to approve a 2% investment to the general education formula, as Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith have proposed. What is being described in this bill is not just a scholarship proposal, it is also an income tax credit proposal. When trying to understand who would benefit from the tax credit proposal, we use data from the charitable contribution tax deduction. According to House research, using analysis from the Research Division of the Department of Revenue in 2013, the 10th decile, or the top 10% by population, received 67% of the tax expenditure for the charitable contribution deduction. The bottom 40% receives only 1% of the tax expenditure. for charitable contributions. And since this is structured as a first-come, first-served credit with a maximum of $35 million, it will likely be first used by sophisticated taxpayers that can afford accountants and attorneys. When policymakers make decisions about where to spend limited public dollars, decisions are made about which schools should receive those public dollars. For instance, policymakers have provided schools with debt service equalization aid program. That aid program provides state aid to local school districts to help repay bonds issued to finance construction. This is a policy decision to target education dollars according to a specified need. And as a reminder, Governor Dayton has proposed an increase of $62 million over 4 years to help school district provide adequate school facilities without overly burdening private property owners. Another example is small schools revenue. A school district that serves less than 960 pupil units is eligible for small schools revenue equal to $544 times district's adjusted pupil units, and it uses a ratio. Both of these represent targeted decisions to appropriate public dollars to achieve public outcomes. In the case of this bill, the primary driver on where public dollars will be spent is where the donor decides to provide the money, not based on factors or formulas prescribed by law. It will likely be foundations that they know or those in their area. Setting up a public financing system so that public dollars will go to the, will likely go to those with access to the top 10% of Minnesotans muddles policymakers' goals of targeting resources where there is the greatest need. This is a substantial tax benefit for those taking the credit, and it is a significant expenditure of public dollars. For example, Mr. Chair, let's take a donation of $10,000 by an individual at the 39.6% federal income tax bracket, assuming this is an additional charitable contribution. For Minnesota tax purposes, this would reduce tax by 70% on, let's say, $10,000. This would equal $7,000. For the federal tax impact, this increases itemized deductions for charitable contributions by $10,000, reduces itemized deductions for state income tax by $7,000, producing a net increase of itemized deductions by $3,000. Federal tax income would reduce by $3,000. Take the federal tax rate, 39.6, from $3,000, you have a benefit of about $1,200. In total, you would receive $8,188 back from the government for your charitable contribution to these foundations. The actual cost of a $10,000 donation from these donors would be about $1,800, or about 18 cents on the dollar. This is a significant preference provided to foundations that provide private school scholarships compared to other foundations or nonprofits. This inequity would treat foundations that work on important health issues, helping the poor, animal shelters, community foundations, churches, food shelves, and others that help the disadvantaged to foundations providing these private school scholarships. We must look at the benefits provided to one set of foundations with the work being done by thousands of other foundations and nonprofits in Minnesota. One primary concern with the credit is that it's very little accountability to measure whether or not is effective at actually creating positive outcomes. With public schools, we know that the schools are following state and federal accountability requirements. Private schools do not have to take state tests or are subject to other standards of accountability. So there isn't a good way to measure how well students that will potentially receive this scholarship would compare.
Mr. Cummings, this is extremely interesting, but could you please wrap it up?
I have a very short amount of testimony, Mr. Chair. I'll focus back on the tax issues. Beyond the larger accountability, equity, and effectiveness questions, there are serious concerns about how this credit would be administered. While we appreciate the confidence Representative Crescia has in the Department of Revenue, our department has very little experience in ensuring that educational standards for Minnesota students are met. This legislation would require DOR to determine whether eligible students meet requirements, the criteria to receive a qualified grant, whether qualified schools meet the criteria to participate in the program, and other requirements. Investigating foundations to, so that they meet educational, employment, criminal screening, and other requirements is not the expertise of tax auditors. And in closing, Mr. Chair, You've heard many bills that would now add up to billions of dollars in tax cuts in your committee. Other chairs have heard proposals that invest billions of dollars in health care, education, economic development, transportation, and other programs. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith in their budget prioritized Minnesota students by believing in and investing in our public schools. This administration is committed to improving educational opportunities for every Minnesotan, everywhere in Minnesota, by expanding volunteer pre-K, by doubling the enrollees, and by investing in $600 million more to provide better schools for students and families everywhere, and as part of that, an increase in special education. This bill shouldn't be used as a tool to not provide the needed investments or improvements to our public schools all across Minnesotans. Make no mistake, Mr. Chair, this is the public financing of private schools. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith are opposed to this bill and remain concerned about the many aspects outlined in the bill. I know that there are other comments about Representative Knobloch's bill, but it sounds like that bill will be heard on a different day.
Here's what we're going to do, members. If there's one thing I will not do is cut off debate, but I do see the clock. So.
We appreciate the opportunity of your resource, Mr. Chair, and we look forward to continuing the conversation.
And we appreciate this. So what my intention will be, just so members know, is to lay over 386. We'll be bringing back 387, and I'm assuming that the for and against is probably the same comments, same issues. So we're not going to take all new testimony on that. We will be able to comment, ask questions on 386 of the department and anyone else that the committee wants to. But because of time, we need to get going here. So Chair Dabney.
First of all, and perhaps most importantly, when, as we know her, Nancy testified, she referred to Minneapolis South, Gallant Tigers.
It's who?
Gallant Tigers.
Gallant?
Gallant Tigers.
What is a Gallant Tiger?
It's not clear to me. but they do have an irritating habit of asking you to have a tigerific day. It's just, we'll move on.
How about eat Frosted Flakes for breakfast? Right?
I can't believe I've been a South High parent for 3 years and I never thought of Frosted Flakes.
That's funny.
It's a gift, but
no,
I appreciate your openness when we hear House File 387, but House File 386 has some unique provisions and implementation issues, much of which Mr. Cummings touched on, but there's the interaction with the federal code citation that's here, and other things that are unique to 386. So how are we going to be able to get back to fully explore what's different between 386 and House File 387?
This would be my intention to have Mr. Cummings right there, and if members have questions, not only on 387 but 386, they would be in order. And so, Lead Marquardt, I hope that's acceptable. I know you've got some questions, so this discussion is not over by any means. So we're not cutting it off, but now 5 minutes over. Okay. It's not that I'm paranoid. It just seems like everybody's after me. You want to wrap it up, President Cresha, for a minute?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. All I want to say is, and the comment was heard, that tax credits are to incent behavior to bring about public good. And if you can't look at the efforts of Mr. Port, who stops for the kid and puts him in the back of his car, I would think, what can we support?
Okay. Thank you. And with that, the discussion is open yet on 386 and 387 for a future meeting. But I will move that House File 386 be later for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Now, members, I do want to be very clear that this committee, I think I can speak for the whole committee, we love Mr. Bartholomew. So that being said, good government all the time. We are adjourned.